I often imagine what these conversations were like between John the Baptist and his disciples. You know, they've been out camping along the River Jordan for several weeks, and I imagine them up in one of the caves, the Qumran caves that they discovered 50, 60 years ago, just north of the Dead Sea and just to the side there of the Jordan. And I imagine them late at night around a fire, talking and John teaching. And after some time, I imagine him teaching about the Messiah, the Anointed One, the Messiah, the Christ who is to come. And I imagine these disciples wanting to know more and leaning in and saying, John, will this Messiah be like Elijah? And John saying, yes, a prophet who shows the way so clearly that even a fool can follow it. And another person around the circle saying, well, John, will he be a teacher of the law? And John saying, yes, he will teach the law so that your heart will shine, so that all around you will see the light. And from the back of the circle, I imagine a voice that says, John, will he overthrow these Roman oppressors? And after a pause, John replying, he will have a might like they have never seen. Now this probably gets the disciples even more excited, and they want to know more about what this will be. And so John continues, and John says, he will be so powerful. He will have such a power that it will be known by an animal. Right now, they've been in the wilderness for a while. They know what wild beasts are. And so one of them says, John will be like a lion, right? Will he be known like a lion of Judah? He says, well, no, that one's already taken. Well, maybe like a bull, like the strong bull of Bashan. Well, no. And then in the way back, there's what about a Leviathan? You know, there's one in every crowd. John says, no, people, no. This Messiah, this long-awaited Messiah will be known as a Lamb of God. A lamb. Really, seriously, you've got to be kidding me. The one we've been waiting for that's going to save us is a lamb? What on earth? How could this be terrifying? How could this be shock and awe-inducing? A Lamb of God. A lamb. A friend of mine was talking with her niece recently, and they were talking about whether or not her niece should see this new Star Wars film, Rogue One. And my friend was describing the movie to her, said, well, you know, there are a lot of really intense battle scenes. And now, this is a spoiler alert, but I feel like the film has been out for about a month now, so this is okay to do. But she said to her niece, every main character by the end of the film is killed. And this is true. I mean, every time you admire a character or you really fall in love or you're rooting for this character, they are all, by the end, killed. And the response of her niece was honest and it was telling. She said, "That's stupid. That's a dumb story. Why would I want to watch that?" Why? Right? I don't think that many of the followers of the teachers in the first century, maybe just about as many of them as us, really want to watch that. Right? Because think about our cultural narratives, especially the movies that gain the percentages of the screens. How many of them, as the story arc, does the main character by the end, do they overwhelm or overcome or maybe even obliterate their opponents or their enemies? It's more than I can count. And then think about all the films or the TV shows, the real dominant narratives, where at the end of the story, the hero, the protagonist, the main character, it all comes together because they die. I think maybe on one hand, right? That's not the story we're looking for. And I can also imagine, you know, if this were a dominant cultural narrative that, you know, the hero dies in the end, I can imagine these Hollywood producers saying, "Where are we going to get our sequels?" Right? That's where all the money is. Right? I suppose maybe if you bring the main character back to life, that would help. But truly, friends, that is not the story we tell ourselves in this country. Right? That is, even though there are many who call this a Christian nation, and I honestly don't know what that means. But that is not this narrative of a Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world, a Lamb of God, a Lamb. This is not one that we often choose to follow. And it's scholar Greg Garrett who offers that we are really more likely to want an all-powerful Passover deliverer then we are going to want a Passover lamb. And that's what we have. A vulnerable Passover lamb. And now, we are pretty far removed from an era of animal sacrifice, right? So it's hard to wrap our minds around what that might mean. But even just the word sacrifice has lost some of its meaning, has been diminished, it's my sense. And so one of the definitions that I have found helpful over the years is that sacrifice is giving something of value for something of even greater value. Giving something of value and receiving something of even greater value. We see this a lot in those who serve in the military, right? Who have this shared sense of sacrifice, a willingness to give their life for something greater. We see this sometimes with parents, right? As parents sometimes give of themselves for their children, right? Time, attention, sleep, money, blood, sweat, tears. Sacrifices given in the fullness of this love supreme. And it's not that this Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world, it's not that this is passive or easy. In fact, to be able to face up to violence or discord or hatred and choose to respond with a vulnerable and powerful love that encompasses the pain. Well, this is the kind of power that can bridge the distance between two people, that can ultimately bridge the distance between us and our God. And it's this vulnerable love that John the Baptist sees, right? That he reveals, that he makes known. He says, here it is, right here, this Jesus. And I could understand how you and I might say, well, great, that was Jesus, I am Phil. And the biblical scholar Sandra Schneiders, she has taught at the Jesuit school about four blocks from here, is one of the world's foremost scholars of this Gospel of John. And she teaches that whenever in John's Gospel there is an unnamed character, beware. Because that unnamed character is the everyone character. It is us. And so, in this story, John the Baptist says, look, here is the Lamb of God. There are two disciples. One is named Andrew. One is not us. And the question that Jesus asks those two disciples, that Jesus asks you and me, is the question that I have been wrestling with all week. What are you looking for? What do you seek? What are you searching? What are you striving to find? Friends, in this time of tremendous cultural destability, I am looking for the Lamb of God. I am looking for the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world, that engages the world in all of its pain and suffering and violence and uncertainty, and responds with a vulnerable love. Because I have a sense that in order to make things right in this world, that will not come by intimidation. It will not come by retribution or by isolation or by indifference. It will not come even by intellect or by wisdom. But it will come when we are able to meet one another with a vulnerable, sacrificial love. Look, seek, search, be prepared to give. Look for the revealers, the God revealers amongst us. This past week, I've been looking to Paul Jones and Dorothy Day and Martin King and Simone Weil and Cesar Chavez and Look to those moments, those people who are giving of themselves. Someone who is a friend sitting bedside of someone who is near the end. Someone who is willing to give themselves to try one more time. Friends, I have a trust. I have a trust, a deeply held trust, that the Lamb of God is here, abiding, dwelling, remaining. And the way forward for all of us will be led by the Lamb of God who shows us the way.